כמה אנשים מהקיבוץ שרוצה כזה להכניס ולראות, just to peep in and see what's going on here, זה הזמנה ממני. So אם יש אנשים באמצע השיחה שנכנסים ולראות זה בסדר, אין להם במילא מקום לשבת. So they'll have to come in and then go out. בדיוק כמו שאמרתי על המחשבות, שאין למחשבות אין מקום לשבת, אז הם צריכים להיכנס ולצאת. So the title of the talk is How Can We Feed Our Freedom? And here we are, we've been here not much more than a day, but we're sitting quietly, not doing very much, minding our own business, and all hell breaks loose. We get overwhelmed by our mind goes crazy, we want to run away, we have these huge desires and needs and reactions and responses, and it's the ordinary mind that we come here with on steroids. Why? Because we're doing nothing. Because we're doing nothing in a rather significant way, in a dedicated way, meaning we're actually stopping. And what happens when we stop? Like a pool of water, of still water, then things come up from under, or we see the mud underneath, or all the things that are down there float up. And so the fact, that's the purpose, or one of the purposes of us stopping, of samadhi, of stillness, is allowing our inner life to bubble up. And sometimes it's just too much for us. But we allow it because it's important that we know what there is to work with. This is the raw material. This is our chomer gelem. This is the raw material which we have to work with. Otherwise we just push it away, we leave it, we don't change, we're not engaged with our stuff, or we need a expensive process of a psychologist for years. Here it can happen in one day. Truth comes up big time. So we have to understand that this is part of the practice. If we do feel that it's a bit overwhelming, a bit too much stuff coming up, it's actually part of the practice. What comes up is the voices of our conditioning, hatnaya. It's the voices that have come in us our whole life are now in us, and they bubble up. They're in our body, they're in our heart, they're in our body-mind, they're in our subconscious. So we can feel desires, we can feel angers, we can feel reactions, we can feel tiredness, switching off, we can feel restlessness, we want to run away, we can feel confusion, many, many things, but it's coming up from under. It's like the voices of the unconscious or the subconscious coming up. And so it's good that we give them space, but we have to know how to deal with them. And that's part of what's called the path of purification, the way of purification, which is one of the ways that this practice is described. Kind of nikui, tihur. That's just one way of looking at what we're doing here. So with that, there may be, you know, the nice words that you've heard from this stage, joy and peace and freedom and so on, the nice words, they may happen or they may not. Don't worry about it. Whatever happens, happens. So we are aware that things arrive. As I say, we sit quietly and visitors turn up, and many of them we don't want. Guests knocking at the door, marching into our inner life, the voices that maybe we prefer not to hear. Who invited them in? Well, in a way we did, but it's not really us. We shouldn't take responsibility completely for these voices, because they're life. As a child, we didn't go to our father and say, I need some good hits now. It happened. Life gives us makot, gives us hits. And it's not exactly our invitation. So the voices that we hear are not all just our voices, but we have in a way invited them in. We give them space, they do arrive. And it raises many questions. Do I allow them, accept them, fight them, run away from them, stop them? Do I change something? If my body hurts, the visitor to my body-mind, do I change my posture or do I just stay with it? But this is important in life. If I have a really, really bad time at my high-tech company that I'm working there, and the people there are terrible to me, do I be a Buddhist and say, I have to accept? I have to accept? Or do I say, I'm getting out of here? And how do we decide? So it's the same with these voices. Do I change something? Do I shift them? Or do I allow them because they're visitors that I need to look at? So they're questions. So it's important to see that if we ask why is the unpleasant experiences arising and where do they come from, I think it's important to see that there's something very, very basic about existence, and it doesn't matter whether we're a human being or a cat or a ant or a chaydak. To be born in this life, to receive a body, it's asking for trouble. No joke. And that's the first noble truth of the Buddha. You might have heard of the Four Noble Truths, but the first one is not that life is suffering. Sometimes people don't interpret that properly. It's not that life is suffering. It is that because we are born in a body, there will be suffering in our experience. But life is not suffering. Life is just life. The sky doesn't suffer. But there will be suffering because when we're born in a body, we have to spend our whole life looking after it, struggling, controlling, eating, getting satisfied, getting our needs sorted out, stopping being ill, stopping being old, stopping dying. Hard work all our life. Being happy, being liked, being loved, having relationships, having money, having a flat, having this, non-stop. So it starts when we're a baby. We have bliss, 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 and then, effortsitsi. And then the rest of our life we go, effortsitsi. I mean, the titi has got become everything. It's become entertainment, it's become joy, it's become having, it's become money, it's become this, the whole thing. And we're still doing it. And our senses, the khushim, the senses, are always checking, what do I need, what's missing, what's wrong, what do I have to do, what do I have to sort out, what's needed now, what do I have to get better, what do I have to fix? We're always looking. Is it possible to be different from that? And I think that's the good news. Yes. Because the third noble truth of the four noble truths is that liberation from that is absolutely possible. And there is a place, a way of being, in which these fires of neediness and struggle for living are cooling down, are not burning anymore. This is the translation of nirvana in Sanskrit, nibbana in Pali, cooling the fires go out. And it is certainly possible. And I won't go into it now, but you can imagine, perhaps, where experiences that you have actually don't go anywhere. They don't get built into anything. Yes, there can be unpleasant or pleasant. Yes, there can be hunger. I'm sure the Buddha felt hunger, and it's time to eat. So he went off to the villages to collect food. Why did he eat? Because the body said, now is the time, hunger. It's natural. The biological function of the being is not a problem. But the problem is when we build out of it stories, needs, issues, constructions, struggle, non-stop activity. Hunger comes, hunger goes. That's it. You eat, no hunger. You don't eat, tummy hurts. End of story. That's all. So it's, you can feel that there is a place of deep peace where you're not making out of things through the senses or through the mind, not building stories, reactions, responses, needs, not building karma, making more karma so that the next is the same as what was. That's karma. So what we're doing, when I talk about the, joking about the tzitzi, it's actually karma. Because if we keep doing the same thing, that's karma. So we stop that. That is possible. We get off the wheel. Just get off the wheel. And it's this is a deeply spiritual realization, and we live differently according to the third noble truth of liberation. It's very much non-personal. It's universal. It's something universal, something cosmic. So, what's about the second one? The second noble truth is what we do to get there. And this is our practice right here. And The second truth has got something very, very positive in it and very important. And that is, you can say it in almost one sentence, that everything is workable. Everything is workable. Niten lavod. We may feel things are so stuck in us, like a psychological pattern or an issue that's bugging us, that's coming morning and noon and night and again the next day. Our anxieties, our needs, our desire, our restlessness, our crazy mind, it seems so stuck. But it got stuck. And if it got stuck to us, it can get unstuck. What gets stuck can also be undone. So in the many words for this in the tradition, where obvious word is attachment, heyachzuyot. And in the tradition it's often called a kind of enchantment, that we're enchanted, there's a spell, and then we feel life is like that, but we are actually being enchanted, there's like a spell on us. This is life, I have to start, this is it. And we're stuck inside, and someone's put a spell on us. And we feel, but there's possibility of disenchantment. Ihikasmut. It is possible to get out of the spell. And the way we do that is when we see visitors right here. We do it now, today, this evening, tomorrow morning. The visitors that come, we look them straight in the eyes. We say, I see you. I know who you are. I'm looking at you. You're coming and knocking at the door. I open the door. I allow you to be in, to come in. I don't shut you down. I don't deny, or don't push you into under suppression, push you down. I allow you to come in, but I need to see who you are. So we recognize what's coming in, and we become very aware that what comes in also goes out. What comes in, the door will go out. He may come back again afterwards, but he goes out. In and out. Just think, they're the most unbelievably crazy, total mind state that we're sitting with here. What happens when the bell rings for lunch? Finished. There's lunch. Gone. This cosmic disaster just collapse when the bell rings for lunch. So things come, things go. And we need to see that clearly. And the other thing is, if we see clearly what comes and goes, if we see the visitors, we understand we are not them. When we see something coming in, it means we, the looker, the observer, the witness, ha'ed, is not them. Therefore, there's a free consciousness in us that is able to look at the content, ha'tochen. And that's important to know. Our consciousness is clean, is free, and it turns to look at, and then it feels identified with. So very often we don't notice this. It's like we don't really notice the light in this room. We only see the light when it lights up the walls and the ceiling and the people and the colors. So we see light. But we only see it when it lights up something. We don't see the light itself. Our consciousness is like that. But without light in the room, which we don't see, everything would be dark. You wouldn't see anything. So the consciousness is free but, and allows us to see things. We can actually pay attention to that awareness. And that it really is behind some of the practice we're doing. Just a sense of being, a sense of being the witness. And that itself there's a freedom in that. So one of the translations of the second truth, attachment, is feeding. And it's quite a nice, the word attachment isn't really a traditional word at all, it's a modern word. The traditional word, upadana, means feeding. So it's what we feed. What do we feed? In our daily life, in our mind, in our way of life, do we feed freedom or do we feed attachment? And part of the practice we're doing is simply not feeding the stuff that gives us trouble. And we don't feed it by just being, not being it, by watching it from the outside coming and going. So it's really important that we do that work. Stuff comes and goes. They are visitors. They're not us. As whenever a visitor comes and goes and we are not it, we don't feed it. We've taken away the nutrition. We feed something else, which is our freedom. There's a famous small story, I guess it's American Indian, about a kid going to the grandmother and saying, there's so much difficulty and pain and suffering in the world, what do we do? And the grandmother said, well, there's two wolves. One is the wolf that gives goodness, and the other is the wolf that is violent and angry and gives trouble. So the kid said, so how do I encourage the good one and stop the painful wolf, the aggressive wolf? And the grandmother said, well, you don't stop the aggressive wolf, you just don't feed it. That's all. You just don't feed it. So it's a sense of being not feeding the difficulties that we experience, but not denying them and not shutting them down. It needs us to look at things a bit differently. Like where I live in Klil, lots of kotsim, endless kotsim everywhere. But they don't have any problem if you don't touch them. They're just kotsim. There's a whole sea of kotsim. If you don't grab a thorn, then it doesn't do anything to you. And the traditional image, a mountain is only heavy if you try and lift it. If you don't lift a mountain, it's not heavy. If you don't grab a thorn, it doesn't hurt. So we can have a different attitude to it, not to deny them, but not to have them, not to get them stuck in us, not to hold on to them. So I wanted a little bit to talk about the practice. Many of you know this. Those of you who've been on MBSR practice know about this. There's a nice slogan called RAIN, R-A-I-N, which is basically a summary of this work. R meaning recognize, see who's knocking at the door. A is allowing, accepting, not suppressing, pushing it away, not seeing. I is to investigate what's it like, what's happening to me, what's the experience of this, so really allow it to express itself. And N, the important one, is non-identification. E is dahut, and that's how we don't feed it. It's arriving and it's passing. It's arriving and it's passing. It's arriving and it's passing, and I'm sitting here quietly in Endor, in a retreat, and just allowing. So this this creates a sort of an issue for many of us. How can I allow this stuff? I mean, all my life I've been struggling against something, and now I have to allow it. And it's a challenge. But in a way, if we look, if we think about it, if we allow what wants to arise, if we allow it to arise, if we allow the voices and not shut them down, if we trust even the voices in us, we're actually taking charge, because we're engaging with it. We're not, when, if we push it away, it comes back from behind. If we push things away, they will get us in places we don't expect and we don't control. But if we full on take, allow things to be the way they are and trust them to be the way they are, we have a chance of working with them. And think of a simple example of a pain in the body. If we try and shut it down, we think we have to go to the hospital and I'll fool us straight away, because it's so, surely I'm going to die here. If we be busy with it, if we against it, if we try and do everything to stop it. Or we can turn to it and say, I see you. Okay, you're not pleasant, but you're a voice in me that I need to look at. I trust you to express yourself. I trust you to express what has happened in my life. It's a message coming up. I trust it. It's coming up because it's the one thing. It's needed. It's there. It's the there's reasons for it to come up. So I'm with it now. So we trust things to be the way they are. And in a way, we take charge that way. So I have to tell a small story that every single retreat I've been telling the same story. So those of you who've sat with me before, please excuse me. But I just, it's just so relevant. So the woman that dreamed that she was being chased by a big monster, and in her dream she ran and she ran and she ran and she ran through fields and trees and forests and running and running and running and running. And the monster was behind her. And eventually she came to a cliff, a tuk, and she couldn't run anymore. So she turned round and the monster came out with big teeth and big eyes. And she said, what are you going to do to me now? And the monster looked down on her and said, I don't know, it's your dream, isn't it? So that's our relationship with our monsters. And it's in a way taking charge. It's our dream. So it's important that we allow things to arrive. You know, there's a very nice image in the tradition of the bowl that the monks use to collect food. And interesting that in the Buddha's time, one very important principle was that they should accept whatever they were given. And until this day, the monks have rituals to do with that. But it's kind of an important principle of not to live with chamdanut, is that the word? Yeah. Neediness, wantingness, wanting this, not this, this better for me, this, not this, this. No. Because of that, the monks weren't vegetarian. Certainly not vegan. Because it was more important, this principle, which in a sense is an ecological principle, because it's good for the planet if we have less needs and less wanting, unless we accept less, we have a low profile. So that it was more important for them to accept what they were given. And as a kind of inner practice, our mind is like this bowl. We just need to accept what life throws in the bowl. Our mind is a bit like the Buddha's food bowl. We just, whatever comes in the bowl, that's what's coming in. We trust it. We allow it. I do agree that when things are very intense, it is okay for us to say, all right, but I can't deal with this. It's really okay. I don't mean to say that we have to be obsessive and everything we have to accept and look at and da-da-da-da. But there may be things that are just too strong for us and too painful and we don't want to look at them right now. It's really okay. I remember when I had a bunch of, some years ago, elderly people from the kibbutzim. I had a class in a college of for elderly people. And there was one guy there who was such a beautiful guy and so helped by the practice, and he loved to meditate, and he just said, I just feel so much peace and so good. But there's one, I can deal with every pain and the body and the thing, but there's one thing that doesn't come into this practice, and that's my experience in the Holocaust, Shoah. And he was in the Holocaust. And he said, this is out of this room. And I said, that's the wisdom. You just know, you need to know, we need to know our limits, it's fine. But we understand that in the end everything is workable. Maybe we have to choose the right time, maybe we'll develop towards it, you know. So, if any of you feeling really overwhelmed by stuff, it's too much for you, it is okay to sort of say, oh, well, it's too much, I can't deal with it, it's not workable, I'll leave it for later, I'll go for a walk in on the grass, and not now, thank you. We can say that to visitors if they're very overwhelming. But the investigation, the exploration is really important. We see the way we build our reality. We see what's coming in. We, the visitors that knock at the door of our mind, is the way we see the world. We see through our senses, our eyes, our ears, we interpret, we understand things, and through our herzuyot, the attachments, for example, our views, we build a world. I have a view that I'm Stephen. It's just a view, but the more attached to it, the more I believe I'm Stephen. How am I Stephen? Just people tell me. From the age of zero, people said, you're Stephen. Okay, then I believe them. Am I Stephen? I don't know. Who says? We build reality by our attachments, beliefs. And when we investigate, and this becomes really important when we have a belief or attachment such as I'm useless, I'm lonely, I'm miserable, I'm depressed, I have psychological issues, I'm stuck with memories, I'm stuck with the past, I had a bad childhood, etc., etc. And then that's the reality, and we give it belief, and we need a place to sort of question this, to look at it, to see it, to see the way we build our world. That's our filter. A little bit we need to open the filter. And one of the things that we can discover, I said before, is that everything flies by. We don't need to hold on to anything. If we really see things pass by, they're like balloons that pop. I taught a few retreats of old people, Chochmata Hizdaknut, and it was amazing to see what happened in actually quite a short time, like 3-4 days, people coming with such a big story of their difficulties and their dependence and the terrible medical system that they have to struggle against all the time, and all the issues of having to look after other people and having to be looked after by other people, and just being old is so hard, and this kind of taking on the message of I'm old and useless and dependent and so on, taking it on. And that's what they came with. And in 3 or 4 days, suddenly realizing that there's so much else. And the joy of sitting having a cup of tea under a tree, the joy of meditating, listening to the birds, just the joy of breathing, the simplicity of being alive. And you could see things changing. People begin to laugh and joke, and the, all the kind of stuck views of themselves getting, and letting it go, letting go, letting go. So we can be a witness to things and not a sufferer. Suffering needs a sufferer. We can say, I'm not going to be a sufferer. I'm going to see the difficulty, but I'm not going to be the sufferer. So I want to briefly address two confusions or issues, just in a few words, that sometimes come up when we talk about attachment. And one is that we can feel attachment is needed and understand this. And you might be thinking, yeah, but I need it. Can I not be attached to my children? Surely attachment is needed, otherwise the families wouldn't exist. The relationships wouldn't exist. How can I be with my children if I'm not attached to my children? Isn't it healthy to be attached? To some extent that's true. Attachment to what's good, what's helpful, up to a point. But we often get attachment confused, because what really holds relationship together is intimacy, is love, is care, is trust, is closeness. These are qualities of being that hold, that are the basis of relationship, not attachment. That we may see, they may seem like attachment, but they're not. And they hold the relationship. So, yes, to some extent, sometimes we need some attachment for some time or at certain periods or for certain reasons, and it can be healthy. But slowly, slowly, we can let go of attachment, everything. We don't need to hold on. Holding on is painful. And sometimes I have a memory of watching two snakes dancing together in a nature film. I just saw Tsefa, male and female, And they were dancing like that. And they were just dancing together. And I thought, that is what the relationship is. A relationship is two people, a family, parents and children, dancing together. That's not attachment, that's dancing together. So the second confusion that comes sometimes about attachment or the unclarity is what I mentioned before, is non-attachment, if I let go to things, is it the same as indifference, adishut? Do I have to accept and accept and accept everything? Or can I change things? Do I have to say that a difficult experience is attachment, so I just have to become non-attached and still put up with it? Like I said, if I'm having a real hard time at work, or if I have a terrible relationship, I have to keep in the relationship because I just have to work on my attachment? Or can I go? And so there is a story here. But I think it's a slight difficulty with this word accept. This teaching doesn't force us to make us accept the unacceptable. For example, itzedek, injustice in society, should we just accept it because we don't want to be attached? So there is another way of looking at things, which is that we are with our experience, we're not against it, we allow our experience, but we don't need to just give in until the Arimi Adayim and say, that's the way things are, I do nothing. On the contrary, it's in being with fully, just like engaging with our demons and seeing our demons fully and knowing what they are and then acting, we are invited to engage with life. It's why so many people in the Dharma, they're the ones going out and doing things that others don't do or too frightened to do. There's so many programs, for example, in Tovana, of people going and doing what almost nobody in the country will do. Going to difficult places to make peace, going to visit cancer patients who are dying in order to bring them relief, or on a voluntary basis, going out where places where others don't do that. There is, and not only here, but all over the world, actually the Buddhists tend to be more engaged and more connected and more working for peace and justice in society, not just giving up and saying, oh, I have to accept and just stay at home, meditate. I have to accept everything. It's not about accepting, but it's about allowing things to be what they are, not to suppress, run away, close, filter, censura, but to see things straight and then let them touch you and you go and act. And indeed, if opening the consciousness, you become aware of what's needed. And so you become more able to go out and help others because you're aware and less full of your own issues. We just had a few months ago a campaign about climate change. And I don't know if any of you were there. We had a big event in Kikar Habima. And there was a lot of people, 1,500, I think, came. And I was talking a few words there to everybody about dealing with helplessness. And helplessness faced with something like the climate change, Shinui Aklim, is a block to action. But helplessness would be one of those visitors that we want to see, say hello, goodbye, I'm not you. Non-identification. Clean the helplessness. And if we clean the helplessness, we can go out and make change. So it's not about accepting and giving up. There's a nice quote here from Thich Nhat Hanh. Have a look at the tree outside. Look at it with complete attention. It is truly a miracle. If you notice it, you will take good care of it. And you too are part of the miracle. Caring for it, it's already going to be greener. It's exactly the same with the people who are around you. Under the influence of awareness, you become more attentive, more understanding and loving. And your presence not only feeds you and makes you more lovely, it enhances them as well. Our entire society can be changed by one person's peaceful presence. So, working with what arises in the way I said, watching that it comes and goes, non-identification, it's one important aspect of what we're doing here. There are others. This is not a summary of everything. And we mentioned some of the things and we will keep talking about them and they are part of the practice. For example, appreciating joy and peace when we sit quietly. It's not all about dealing with our demons. There's many other tools and practices that are going along with it. We can meet new powers. We can find new resources, mashabim, inside us. And that's part of the practice too. And it goes into the spiritual world, of course. It's not just the psychological world, it's the spiritual world. Because every moment that we let go with stuff that's holding us down and they're making us contracted, that's putting us in a box, if we let go of stuff, what happens? Space opens up. Where there was something controlling us, closing us, and we manage to let it go, to let it dissolve, then what happens? There's space and freedom instead. And that gets bigger and bigger. So when we let go of the limited, it invites the unlimited. There's a Sufi image that their spiritual life is like digging a well. And how do you dig a well? Khofer bor. You throw away everything that's not water. The Buddhist teaching would go one more step and say, everything is magical, the earth and the water. Both of them are part of the magic of life. Thank you. So we'll just take 2 minutes to be quiet.